Hello and welcome to Coaching in Education, the podcast from Growth Coaching International, where we explore the power of coaching to transform learning, leadership and whole school communities. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in today's episode, we're continuing our Stories from the Coaches series, shining a light on the people who are helping to shape coaching cultures around the world. In our last episode, we celebrated the incredible coaching career of GCI's Penny Verdich as he approaches retirement. So today, we're turning to new beginnings, meeting two of our newest senior consultants, Dean Clayden and Sarah Cole. We're going to get to know their stories, what drew them into coaching, what they're passionate about, and the exciting work they'll be leading with schools across Asia. So, settle in. I know you're going to enjoy this conversation. Sarah, Dean, lovely to have both of you here. Can you tell our listeners where in the world are you joining us today?
Thanks, Richard, for inviting us in. I am calling in from sunny Singapore.
Fantastic.
Hi, Richard. Thanks again for the invitation. I am in Shanghai in China.
Superb. We're definitely coming in from all parts of the world today, so it's a truly global conversation. Fantastic to have you both. Can you each give us maybe a little snapshot of your professional journey so far? And Sarah, we'll start with you.
Sure. Health and physical education teacher, head of department, teaching and learning coordinator, originally from the UK in a county called Devon. Moved across the south coast to Kent, so teaching secondary PE and national curriculum. 2008, thought I needed a bit of a challenge, went over to Australia, teaching secondary HPE and middle school science for Queensland and Brisbane Catholic Ed, and thought, why not try somewhere else again? So I ended up in Hong Kong doing the MYP, so my first days of International Baccalaureate. And the last 12 years, I've been here in Singapore, my first primary post, so PYP, and a not-so-typical teaching and learning role.
Fantastic. A passport is getting well stamped up over that period of time. Sarah, thank you very much. Dean, what about you?
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, I'm also a primary teacher by trade. You can probably tell from the accent, started off in Scotland. So I was working there in a local school for, you know, the first part of my career. And similar to Sarah, I got the itch to go overseas. Thought that I would be a kind of tourist teacher. Went off to Shanghai for what was originally meant to be 1 year. And that was 14 years ago. I'm still in Shanghai. But in that time, I've worked in a range of international schools in the city. And in the last 3 years, moved more into a group-wide role as a director of professional learning. So, you know, although I've done leadership stuff in the past and in previous schools, I guess I've kind of been in the business of teacher and leadership growth for a while, and now really happy to be joining GCI with Sarah as well and building things in Asia.
Fantastic, fantastic. So we're all about coaching on this podcast. Sarah, when did you first encounter coaching and what was it that clicked for you?
Coaching in the essence that we're talking about and not sports coaching. Back in 2018, I actually attended a high performance workshop, which I thought was about leadership, physical health and nutrition. It was something completely unexpected. There were these two other people who called themselves coaches, and that's when I got introduced to ontological coaching. And it was something around leadership. I asked a question, or I was stating a belief, and the workshop leader turned around with curiosity and challenged it. It was like, does it have to be like that? And I was like, no, actually, it doesn't need to be like that. It could be anything. But I don't know what the answer is yet. And so that got me hooked in. And I was like, oh, tell me more about these questions, this coaching stuff. Because my experience had previously been through a sports coaching with gymnastics, trampolining. And as a PE teacher, teaching sports or coaching sports. So this other way of asking questions and listening in different ways. I was like, tell me more about this, because I can see how coaching and education can work hand in hand. It just makes total sense to me. So I ended up doing the flagship program, ongoing training, ongoing programs. And I was like, how can I bring this to my school? How can I bring this way of being? And so that's what hooked me in to coaching.
That's interesting, and that's interesting. We talk about the sporting analogy in there, and that's still today, 2025, folks are hearing the word coaching and they're thinking of sports. And it's interesting we have that tennis racket right behind you, you know, in the screen. and that is true for a lot of folks. But that's really helpful. You know, I like that idea where, you know, you saw in many ways a different side to coaching. And I love your question, how can I bring this into my school? That was very much the hook for you. Sarah, that's fantastic. Thank you for that. Dean, for you, was there a particular moment when you realised coaching could really transform how educators grow and connect?
Yeah, definitely. It was, I worked in Wellington College, China for quite a while. And it was Ian Henderson from The Bridge UK. And he had a foundation course when I was assistant principal. And I just realized that I'd been leading really badly, trying to fix things for people, trying to, you know, be the fixer as assistant principal. And I think that was at the time when I realized, oh, I can build independence in my team. If I ask the right questions, then actually I can find out how they want to be helped. And also sometimes, you know, they might want mentoring, they might want coaching. So for me, it was very much a realization that there's a better way to empower your people. But also just the training itself, I'd heard a rumor that it was like the best professional development that people had been on. And I was like, I was quite curious. I was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And I think for me, it wasn't like a typical course, like a typical module that you go on or a weekend. It was time for me to reflect on my personal goals and my professional goals. And actually, a lot of the stuff that we were coached on, yes, it was about school, but it was also about our life. And I think because we give so much to our students, often as educators, we don't really take time to think about us. And I think that people really appreciated that space to be able to kind of, you know, open up and reflect on everything that was kind of showing up for them, both in their personal and professional life. So yeah, just that power of the conversation and having the time to do that, because schools are busy, as we know.
Yes. Very busy places. And it's interesting, as you say that, Dean, and a lot of folks will be smiling as they listen to this, but your phrase, and I can relate to this as a school leader, I'd been leading really badly. And I mean, and that is, you know, in many ways a realization, not just a reflection on our leadership, because we all lead very, very well, but maybe an opening to a new way of leading. And I love that comment, you know, I can now build independence within my team. So you have an input into that, but it's more around, I'm going to start asking better questions, which is really, really helpful. So we're thinking about the idea of being experienced, you know, the experience of being coached. Sarah, what surprised you most about the experience of being coached yourself for the first time?
Yeah, for me, it was how hard it was. I actually was so used to being told what, why, how, you know, especially in schools when we're told, okay, we're going to do X, Y, Z, or we're going to implement 1, 2, 3. And coming inward for the answers and being seen, being challenged to recognize the stories, the beliefs that held me back, the power within me, rather than being told, do this, do this, do this. And so I found it quite hard at the beginning, to be honest. And I was deciding what I wanted to work on that was relevant to me, my life, my classroom, my staff. The simplicity, not easy, but the simplicity, the task of the coach supporting me to move my thinking forward on whatever topic I decided to bring to the conversation. So simplicity, but hard was my experience, to be honest.
Yeah. I think you're right. I can relate that to that myself, you know, going back to my own experience of being coached. I mean, it is difficult the first time you're introduced to it. And when you're being coached well, it is a simple process. There's no rocket science involved at all. But I love your phrase, being seen. And being seen means ultimately being heard. So the other person is obviously, you know, listening and having a conversation in a way that you feel seen and heard. And also that word relevant. So it's relevant to you there and then, which makes it a very, very powerful conversation. Dean, what about you? Can you remember an early coaching conversation that really stayed with you, you know, one that maybe shaped how you think about your role today?
Yeah, definitely. It was not that early. It was quite recently, actually, but it has stuck with me. It was at the Institute with Jim Knight, and he was coaching me as a doing a demonstration. And that's actually where I met Sarah in Singapore. And I knew about strengths-based coaching. I'd read about it a lot. I obviously listen out for people's strengths in the coaching that I do, but being coached by someone else and then mirroring back my strengths, I think maybe that's the critic in myself. I'm always trying to improve, or maybe I guess teachers in general, we're always striving to improve. But actually, it was taking that moment to stop and think about what I'm actually doing well. And Jim identified these strengths that perhaps I'd maybe forgotten. You know, when we're having a bad day or a bad week or a bad term, it's sometimes really hard to remember the good in what people are doing. And so that kind of strengths-based approach and, you know, remembering that there's a lot of great in what we do. I think more people in schools need to hear that and need to be reminded of that. And it certainly put a spring in my step and made me think, oh, right, okay, it's not so bad. I've got this. So yeah, that was the strengths-based coaching. And obviously from Jim, you know, what an opportunity to be coached by him.
Yeah, yeah. But I think you're right. The word that resonates with me there, Dean, is opportunity. So, you know, as educators, we spend so much of our time, and rightly so, looking at where the gaps are, you know, what we need to improve for ourselves, for our team, for our students ultimately. But quite often in the midst of all of that, and it's very well intentioned, in the midst of all of that, we forget about what's actually going well at the moment. You know, that phrase, you know, wake up, you're here, have a look around and see what's actually going well. And there's a big, big element of coaching that can really shine a light on what's going well, which then in many ways gives you the confidence to move forward and try and, you know, bridge those gaps and try and make those improvements. So that's going to be really helpful for folks who are listening in. Both of you folks now support obviously educators and leaders to, you know, create what we would call coaching informed cultures. But your approaches seem deeply personal. Sarah, your work blends curiosity, care, and evidence-informed practice. What does that combination look like when you're in the room with a client or a team?
Care first. It's like written into my contracting. In my contracting, it says your well-being is at the heart of our conversations. And it's also one of the domains of trust from Charles Feltman. So care. Because teachers are doing important work. You are important. Yes, we look at the students, but you are important too. And to do it well, I care about you. And it's one of my favorite teaching paradoxes, actually, because it's not about you and it's all about you. So we can have a bit of fun, you know, a bit of challenge, because we have that foundation of care. And then listening with curiosity. What's said? What's unsaid? Questions that come from curiosity, not from needing to know for myself, but to help move your thinking forward, help broaden your understanding. Noticing, paraphrasing, all those key skills come in with curiosity. And to get clarity on what's wanted and what's working and what's next. Now, because I care, and I'm curious, I'm very likely going to challenge your thinking. And this is not out of thin air. This is with research. That's the evidence-informed practice coming in. And another domain of trust is competence. And so not only the competence of your perceived competence of me, but your own competence of I can do it. We have care, positive connections, there's relatedness and the autonomy and choice of like, I choose to do this. And so that's very much, you know, Ryan and DC self-determination theory. We've got competence, relatedness and autonomy alongside the competence and care and reliability and sincerity of trust.
Mm. I love the fact that you jumped in straight away with that, the fact that care comes first. And, you know, again, busy schools, yeah. You mentioned that schools are very busy, hectic places. There's a lot of pressure involved in the education world. But where you have one other individual in front of you, a teacher, an educator in some shape or form, to be able to, as you say, right up front, make it very clear that I'm here in my capacity to care for you. That's first and foremost. And yeah, you're absolutely right. That's where trust starts to form. So the other person realizes that you have a vested interest in them, you know, from their benefit. You know, not for your benefit, but for their benefit. So that, and that curiosity then fits in perfectly because you're curious for all the right reasons. You're curious in order to help the other person see their strengths. We've talked about that already today, but also in many ways, see what's needed, what's wanted, and move forward. And I love then at that point, you bring in the word challenge. Because challenge is needed as well. You know, we want at the end of a coaching conversation to have helped the other person move forward and have, you mentioned clarity, yes, but also those action steps. So when you finish the conversation, the other person, be it me or somebody else, has an idea, a very clear idea, well, what am I going to do next? Because Sarah has challenged me, but challenged me on the basis that she cares for me. First of all, we've built a little bit of trust. And that challenge then, I'm ready for that. In fact, if it's going well, I'm expecting that challenge. So that's a lovely way of explaining that, Sarah. The listeners will really appreciate that. Go ahead, Dean.
I was just going to build on the importance of the care that you mentioned, Sarah. I think that I've noticed, and I think you'll probably both agree, that sometimes people can come to coaching because the person needs to be fixed. But actually, it's a privilege to have a coach and to have that space with somebody that really does truly care for them and give them that time for them. Because in some schools, the coaching can be sort of used as a stick to beat teachers with, you know. So coming from that contracting point of care, I think that's such a good part of your philosophy. Because I've seen it in schools where it's like, oh, coaching's going to be done to you now because there's something wrong with you. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, no, you're right to pick up on that, Dean. And unfortunately, on too many occasions, there are schools and other organisations where coaching is brought in to fix people. Mm. You know, it's a remedy to something. As you say, that person, there's Richard, he just needs a good dose of coaching and that'll sort him out. You know, his teaching will improve and that's not what we're about. So that's been a lovely way of really making that clear to folks who are listening, which I think is really, really helpful. Sarah, you often talk about experiences that are experientially rich. Isn't that a lovely term? And immediately applicable. What's the secret to designing learning that sticks?
Ooh, learning that sticks. Well, we're not heads on sticks. I can tell you that. We're not here to fill an empty pail. I didn't only talk to my students about leadership or conflict resolution, for example. I created spaces for them to experience it, to embody it, to practice. And the same for the staff. It's opportunities to practice it and embody it. Now, it's easier for the kids as they haven't had multiple decades of practicing and embodying beliefs and ways of being. So with adults, it takes a little bit longer sometimes. So taking a risk, doing something a little bit different. But I know that when I've been in really great learning conversations, there's been something I can try out almost immediately, either for myself, in my classes, for my students, my staff. And it doesn't matter how small. One thing I say a lot is start small, start now, building that momentum. And in the sessions, that's where we're planting the seeds. And the experiential part is a different approach, a different conversation or a different strategy. That's the fertilizer to help grow the trees. And underpinning all of this, to me, is hope. And if you look at hope theory, it's like is it worth it? The goal has to matter. The coachee, you know, do I care about the goal? Coming back to that care. Is there a pathway? Are there pathways for me? Do I have a choice in that? Is it co-created? Most of the time, it's not linear. I'm not starting in A and going to B. It's usually a little bit of a winding road. And the third part is, can I do it? And that's the competence part. So see how it's linking all together now, the care and the competence. If not yet, that's okay. We'll take a little detour. Like I said, it's not linear. But the answer to all of those questions has to be yes. And then learning sticks, change sustains. And having a coach, there's accountability in that as well.
Yeah. I like the way you paint that picture. You know, there's a build up, you know, in that relationship in many ways, but there's an important element for the coach to explain that very clearly to the coachee. I think that's and you've done that very, very well. I love the idea where you're starting off with the fact that there is risk involved. You know, so we're asking the other person to take a risk, but as you say, there needs to be something that they can apply pretty much immediately. They can get, in many ways, you know, a quick win in a positive way to see the benefit of this coaching conversation, which is really important. But there's a lovely phrase, start small, start now. And I think trying to get that, you know, across to folks, particularly folks who are listening to this, they maybe haven't tried this, they're maybe skirting around the edges a little bit, dipping their toe in the water. Start small, but start now, which is really, really helpful. And then ultimately, as you say, down the line, designing learning that will genuinely stick because you've got two people then heading the right direction. Which is really, really helpful. Dean, your recent research, which I find really interesting, Start With The Heart, explores positive psychology coaching and teacher wellbeing. What inspired you to do that study?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Richard. A few things. My great uncle Dan, he was actually a psychologist. And I was looking for a bit of a change in my career. And I remember asking him whether I should do a master's in psychology or not. And he said, oh, if you're bored and you want to learn something new, just do it. So at which point there were certain times of that study that I regret that. So that was part of it because I had a psychologist in the family. But then also from my personal struggles in terms of mental health and well-being as a school leader. I had struggled with managing the job. I'd also seen the struggles that other teachers, you know, go through in terms of stress and burnout. So what I wanted to do was, I know there was a lot of research in the West, as in the US and in Australia, in terms of the impact of coaching. It's obviously very well researched there, but there was less research done with teachers in international and bilingual schools in China. And so I wanted to kind of prove, does it work in our context in China? And we found out that it does. So it does support well-being and you know, that kind of holistic development of teachers. So it was really good to because it ultimately is a Western concept, you know, coaching, and so it was a kind of with curiosity to see what kind of sticks in our context and schools in China.
Yeah. So we're very grateful to Uncle Dan for his input in many ways. But that's lovely.
I mean,
family are very important, and our own, you know, our own relationships can have a very positive impact on us. My late father, he was a school teacher for 33 years in a primary school, and always inspired me to get into the job in the first place and, you know, to really push forward in it. And then you're right, you know, our own personal challenges and struggles can be used in many ways. In this case, if I'm hearing you right, in a positive way, you know, how can we actually make things better here? And if there is research already out there, how can we look at that, read that, and then see, I love the fact, does this apply here in your context? So we're grateful for the work you've done there, you know, and actually putting the time and effort. Thankfully, you were bored enough, as your Uncle Dan said, to take it on, which we're very, very grateful for. And given the fact you have taken it on, which we're grateful for, from what you found, what are the key ways then that coaching can enhance teacher flourishing and resilience in many ways?
Yeah, so there's kind of two main areas that we found in the research. There's the kind of collective side in terms of the positive impacts on the community. And then there's obviously the individual outcomes and how people experience that. So if we take those kind of two areas, we found collectively as a community, the teachers that took part in the 4-day coaching program, which involved some foundation skills and then more advanced work later on, just by being on the course for those 4 days, they felt more connected on a deeper level as a community than those kind of disingenuous corridor conversations, sometimes like, hey, how are you? Fine. So it was around meaningful connection and shared values, which is kind of like the residue of the course. Like, that's not necessarily per se a part of the program and the learning outcomes, but that, you know, obviously there's coaching skills and there's a coaching framework, but then there's the also that connectedness. So then what happened was, as a community after that, they realized that that trust that they built, that caring that you touched on, Sarah, that extended after the course to build a more psychologically safe school environment. And another unexpected thing was, in terms of the community, not just the teachers, but the teachers had reported after the program that they had improved their ability to listen and understand to their husbands, their wives, their sons and their daughters. So that was a really unexpected outcome from their experience. And at the individual level is the more sort of typical things that we would expect in terms of feeling more independent, more improved self-efficacy, leader efficacy as well, that they were better at their job. That they, you know, these sort of emotions, positive emotions around, okay, I've got this, I can do this. The coaching had encouraged them to be more hopeful. Sarah touched on hope earlier on, but also to be grateful for what they do have. And then there was the last part was around this unexpected phenomenon around self-coaching. So the teachers actually reported when they were having a bit of a bad day, they could almost self-coach. So that was like asking themselves, right, okay, what do I really want here? Okay, what's another way of thinking about this? What's another option? So a few of the teachers had mentioned that had built their resilience because, yes, of course, having a coaching conversation one-to-one can help, but there were opportunities for them to improve their coping mechanisms in terms of, oh, I can maybe coach myself a little bit through this. So hopefully I've summarized that project as much as possible. But yeah, those were the main things that was gleaned from the research.
But clearly really, really useful to find that information out and see the impact that has had on those people that were involved. But you know, key things are, you know, people feeling better connected, you know, and proper meaningful connections. And I think that's a really important one, Dean, that impact beyond the classroom. This isn't just about within the 9-to-5 role. It does have a positive impact on who we are outside of school, beyond the bell in many ways. And I think when it comes to the resilience side of things, there's that, you know, I've got this, we've got that, you know, we've heard that phrase a lot, and it's really important where we develop our own personal resilience. But that community side of things, where you're moving from I've got this to we've got this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very much when it comes to the coaching culture within a school, it brings a team of people together to think much more, we've got this. And I think that's really, really helpful. But also, yes, that self-reflective piece, you know, where there are times whenever you won't have a coach in front of you or online or whatever it might be, and you need to start to ask some of those self-reflective questions where you're almost, you know, coaching yourself to a certain degree, which folks will have found helpful. So that's really encouraging, Dean, to hear about that. Folks, you're both working in dynamic multicultural settings, Shanghai and Singapore, which must make for very rich, diverse coaching experiences. Sarah, what have you learned so far about building trust across cultures?
I just want to touch on what Dean was sharing. I could have been one of your participants because as you were sharing what they were, like, yeah, me too. Changed my life.
Oh, that's so good. You could be a participant in the PhD, the next study.
There you go.
Well, I might be getting you back. We can share. Okay, trust. I touched on it a bit earlier, and I would like to add to, yes, trust, and also it's the commitment. The commitment and the rapport that we build together as coach and client or as coach and team. I think that also translates to goal achievement across cultures. I think in the trust, the four domains may vary. So the importance of competence may vary. The importance of care may vary, or sincerity, reliability. But I think commitment and rapport translates across all cultures. And the great thing about coaches are that we're willing to ask questions. And so sometimes they're a little bit more direct, depending on who I'm speaking to. They may become a little bit more indirect as well, because I don't know what I don't know. And I don't want to be ignorant about that, but bringing back that curiosity.
Yeah. I like that idea where straight away you're seeing commitment and rapport works across all cultures. And I think that's one of the strengths of coaching, you know, as a concept. It does work across all cultures, and you folks, obviously, in the communities that you're working with, there's a variety of cultures in there. And we do need to be, yes, culturally sensitive within our conversations, absolutely. But what we're trying to do works across all cultures. And I think that, you know, that's going to encourage folks because, you know, we're becoming a much more multicultural society, no matter where we're listening in from in this particular podcast episode. So that's really encouraging, Sarah, to the folks who are listening.
Add on that you're coaching the person in front of you, or you're coaching the team in front of you. It's not a stereotype that you're coaching. You're coaching the human being everything that they bring with them, their personal histories, their cultures, their influences. It all comes together and all comes through as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very helpful advice to folks who are listening. Dean, are there particular cultural nuances that shape how you listen or ask questions, in your opinion?
I think one of the things I've picked up on the coaching training in China is obviously we talk about coaching skills, you know, fundamental skills, questioning and listening. But when I was running a course in, I think it was either in Shanghai or Hangzhou, you know, we're doing this big session about listening and how important listening is. And one of the participants said to me, "Oh, this is nothing new for us in China, because the traditional character for listen in China, which is ting, inside that character, I don't know if you know much about Chinese characters, but there are separate radicals inside a Chinese character that make the character." And I think the Chinese character itself explains listening really, really well. So within that, first of all, it has a little heart inside, so listen with your heart. So really listen to what the person really wants, their dreams, their goals, their values. And then the other part is 10 eyes. So be observant as if you have 10 eyes. So really listening for the verbal, but also what else is going on for the person. And then to give your undivided attention as if you're obeying like an emperor or a king. So there's also a radical that makes up the king. So when that participant asked me that, I thought, right, now when I introduce listening, I'm just going to show the Chinese character for listen. And it's actually a friend as well, who's also a coach, Clive Leach. He introduced me to that concept of this character maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, and I'd completely forgotten about it until somebody mentioned it on a course. So I think that's a nice cultural nuance in China when we talk about what it means to really listen to someone.
I think that's really helpful, and I've come across the symbol myself, and I think, you know, where that will be natural for those folks to pick up on that, I think that's actually hugely important to take to other parts of the world, to other cultures. You know, we can learn so much from other cultures, and it really does. I mean, the Ting symbol really does sum up, you know, what proper listening is all about. So I'd encourage folks, a quick Google search, you know, Ting, have a look at it and read around it, because I think if you are in the coaching business in any shape or form, that would be really, really helpful. So thanks for flagging that one up, Dean. I had actually forgotten about that as well. So that's going to be helpful for folks who are listening. Sarah, have you found Coaching Connect as a kind of a shared language, maybe a bridge across cultural differences?
Say yes. And coaching can also be a space to recognize our biases or the biases I have and how they show up and impact me and those around me. Because part of coaching is raising self-awareness. And when you are working in multicultural, multinational schools, it comes up and it shows up. And if you're not aware, as I said before, if you don't know what you don't know, it'll come up pretty quick. So I'm still responsible for my choices. So yes, in a shared language. And I think another bridge, especially in instructional coaching, we talk about student-centered goals. So we have a peers goal and the S stands for student-centered. So the goal is out there. And that kind of comes back to the, it's not about you. it's about the students. And when we agree on this student-centered goal, that's powerful, compelling, reachable. Our cultures, our personal histories can activate to help reach it for our students. And I think that's a really nice bridge across. And that's part of the shared language and understanding of what coaching is and is not, and how we support each other to get where we want to go.
Yeah. I think that's very helpful. And when you think about any of the training that we do, you know, shared language comes up quite frequently. Because we're trying to, you know, step into a school, you get one or two flag flyers for coaching, and you want to try and spread that across the school, ultimately trying to develop over a period of time, you know, a coaching culture. But having that idea of a shared language is really important. Yes, it works across different cultures, but it works even just within one school, I think, you know. So for anybody listening, regardless of what part of the world they're coming in from, you know, your school right now, if you're listening to this, needs a shared language across all the different staff when you're thinking about coaching. So that's going to be really helpful for folks who are
shared language and understanding, like unpacking what that word is and what it means to us.
Yeah.
What it means to me, what it means to you, what it means to us. I think that's going to be a really key part that gets missed.
Yeah.
I would just like to build on that, Sarah, as well. Like whenever we do a course, we sort of start off the starter activity that Ian Henderson put on the coaching course, you know, tell us your dream, like what's a dream that you have. And actually with the current situation where things are so divisive and polarized at the moment, when you're in a room and you're doing coaching training, you ask those participants on that starter activity, share your dream, share your goal. Those common values, you know, we all want family and security and love and respect and all those things. And actually, even in our multicultural schools, those values tend to be more similar than they are different. And it's just like how you say that, how to tap into that. And I think we need a bit more of that in the world these days.
There's always room for more of that. Absolutely, Dean.
There is always room for that. Yeah.
A fair point. You folks, obviously, I mean, it's a new chapter for you guys with joining GCI, which we're all very, very excited about. You're both stepping into new roles as senior consultants with us at GCI. And this is very much an exciting time for the whole organization. Sarah, can I ask, what drew you to GCI in the first place? You know, what resonated about its particular approach, or we've mentioned that word values already?
I think I may have come through earlier about research informed. I think that kind of suits the science part of me, the science nerd in me. But I think the biggest thing that drew me in was the generosity. It's like the generosity and making an impact. And for me, stepping out of the teaching role was so that I could make a greater impact across multiple schools, not just the one. And it's collaborative. We work together. practical. So taking in immediately applicable things that we can do. It's not all up here, this abstract idea. It's actually grounded and we can take action on it. And that's the positivity, I mean, better conversations, right?
Absolutely. I love that scale. If we had some way of a little graph, you know, we talked about the research-informed element, which is important to you, you know, that appeals to the scientist in you, and that's very important to Growth Coaching International. And then right through to ultimately having impact on ordinary, everyday educators who are doing the job on the ground. And bringing those two things together, I think, is fantastic. So thanks for highlighting those two. Dean, what are you most looking forward to contributing in your new role?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. I think there's kind of two main things there. One is around supporting the next generation of leaders. Like I touched on before, you know, with the empathy and forgiveness, reflecting on myself and ways in which I perhaps led, that I could have done it differently. So being able to support that next generation of leaders, I think what's tough for school leaders is that, you know, just because you get thrust into that leadership position doesn't necessarily mean that you've kind of built all those kind of skills around curiosity and empathy and how to lead in that kind of coach-like way. And so it's about bringing that work to more people so that they can lead in that new way. And then the other side is a big passion of mine is around excellent instruction and teaching and learning. Even though as consultants, getting into classrooms, actually doing instructional coaching, working with teachers hand in hand, I still do that. Because you've got to have the saw sharpened and know about your pedagogy. There's a lot of great instruction taking place in China, but I'm looking forward to, you know, supporting those next level of instructional leaders and bringing instructional coaching into China. Last May, we had the first ever institute with Jim Knight. We'd never had an institute for instructional coaching in China at all. So and we're very excited to bring that back next May 2026, back in Shanghai. So a little plug there. Mm-hmm. 16th to the 20th of May. Because we're starting to really kind of shift that way of working with teachers that's developmental, with empathy, with choice, and giving teachers a voice to really understand what it is that they need to work on and what they want to work on with their students. Just kind of getting away from that culture of judgment and evaluation and more supportive sort of developmental coaching conversations. So yeah, lots to be done. As you know, China is a big place, so going to be busy, I think.
There's a lot of people there. A lot of people.
There is.
Fantastic, yeah. Dean. Sarah, what about you? What about opportunities that you see for coaching, you know, to make a real difference in your region over the next few years?
I think I'm going to build on what Dean was sharing, and it's that humanity, right? The humanity, especially for me, it's middle leaders, because we ask a lot of our middle leaders to support their team's curriculum, pastoral, to be line managers, and there's so many different hats to be wearing, and that providing the training and the tools and strategies to support them to reduce the stress, to reduce the burnout, the amount of teachers leaving the profession because of all of this extra plus, plus, plus. And I see that in Singapore. I see it across the region. I see it across the world. I mean, that's the great thing about being in the position we're in now, is those conversations globally. But in the region here, where academics tends to be placed very, very highly and expectations on children is very, very high. One, how do we support the teachers to do that? Two, how do we support the parents to have conversations, to reflect on themselves, but also have conversations with their own children? And then how do we have teachers and parents talking to each other as well? All for the sake of the children. So up the top here, and then you've got your staff and your parents together. So a little bit of a mix, middle leaders, yeah. Parents, for our children.
Yeah, there's a significant body of work ahead for both of you. I mean, there is.
Which we
rise to the challenge because, you know, we're all very much signed up to, as we've alluded to already, the power and the impact of coaching. So we have a tool here. We have an approach to conversations which has over the years, decades, proven to have such a positive impact on people's well-being, on their day-to-day practice, on instruction in the classroom, on leadership, on all of those things. So it's very much a positive story. I mean, the word hope's been mentioned a number of times, and, you know, coaching conversations do provide hope for the other person that you're having a conversation with. So, you know, we're very much positive in how we're going to approach all of those challenges. You've both spoken, folks, about, I mean, growth and change. And I'd love to finish this with a couple of reflective questions. So maybe, Dean, if I can ask you this one, what's one lesson that coaching has really taught you about yourself?
Thanks, Richard. I would say anything is possible. if you've got a goal or a dream, sit with someone, have a conversation, make it happen, and just go for it. I'm very grateful to have had many coaches throughout my career that have made huge transformations in my personal and professional life. That's a huge lesson. You know, anything is possible. Just go for it. Have the conversation and follow it up with an action. And you can do anything.
No, I think that's helpful. And, you know, we talk about the phrase anything is possible. And, you know, through a coaching conversation, we've talked about it helps you get clarity. You know, it helps you get perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, it helps you look at what's going well. And through a very, very measured approach, you can move the needle forward, you know. So ultimately, there will be impact. Ultimately, there will be growth. You know, you will see things move forward. So you're right. I mean, anything is possible through coaching conversations with a good coach. I have to make that very, very clear. But, you know, we've seen what a good coach looks like already in our conversation today. Sarah, what gives you, and this has come through already very clear, but what gives you energy in your work right now?
Educational change. Like seeing the impact and the shift that education needs. And also bit by bit, more and more people, we're getting closer to that critical mass of people who are like, no, this needs to change. And how can we change that? Through conversation. And not just any conversation, but through better conversations so that we have better relationships, so that we can get better outcomes. So it's snowballing slowly, but it's getting there.
Yeah. No, you sum that up really well. I mean, educational change. I mean, what leader out there, what teacher, you know, what educator, what parent does not want educational change? You know, and you've encapsulated really well. Through better conversations. You know, as Jim says, you know, our schools are only as good as the conversations within them, and we're all about trying to improve those conversations. Whether they're formal coaching conversations, whether they're corridor conversations, they can all be improved very, very easily. So that's super helpful. Dean, is there one piece of advice you would like to offer to an educator who's listening in and they're maybe just starting to explore coaching?
I'm going to be very uncoach-like. And not summarize this, which is really hard to. I'm going to actually give two bits of advice. the first one is have fun, enjoy the transformation, be curious about it, because it's a great thing to start to learn about. But just enjoy it. Start small with, you know, a little bit of training or whatever. But the other part is be humble, the second bit, because there's so much to learn in coaching. So, you know, obviously we've been coaching for many, many years, but every conversation, or if you read a little bit more about our different frameworks, whatever, or each time you coach somebody, it's quite humbling to realize how much there is to learn around it. I think a lot of people think, oh, I can do a 2-day course on coaching and then I'm a coach. So I would just say start small, but be mindful that it's serious work. it takes time to master it. So just be humble and keep learning.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, you jumped in straight away. Have fun. I mean, genuinely enjoy the process.
Yeah.
This is, it's a beneficial process, and we want people to approach this as something that they're going to actually genuinely enjoy. But alongside that, very importantly, take a humble approach to it. You know, and I think if we can get that balance, that's going to be really helpful for folks who are dipping their toe in the water. Sarah, an interesting question to close on here. If coaching had a soundtrack, one song that captures your journey so far, what would you say it would be?
Promise, Dean and I have not spoken before this. I went back and forth. I was like, oh, it's a really good one.
It's a good question.
I'm going with my gut. I'm going with my gut. And the soundtrack for me is from The Greatest Showman, A Million Dreams. So as Dean was saying about, you know, anything is possible. What's possible? As one of my best friends always asks, what's possible?
Yeah.
And the world we're going to create together, however big, however small, coming back home to ourselves, like the vision of what the world could be, it just fills me with inspiration, with like, yeah, we can do this. So it's a very uplifting and inspiring soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah. A lovely way to finish our conversation. Everybody, whether they're in the car, if they're out walking the dog, or wherever they're doing, maybe they're ironing, they're going to be singing A Million Dreams now, Sarah. So thank you very much for inspiring us. That's a lovely way to answer that question and to bring us to a close. That brings us to the end of this episode of Coaching in Education. A huge thank you to Dean and Sarah for such a thoughtful and energizing conversation. It's inspiring to hear the passion and purpose that you both bring to coaching and to your new roles within GCI. For our listeners, if you'd like to catch up on previous episodes, including that recent reflection with Penny Virgits, you'll find them all on the resources section of our website, growthcoaching.com.au, as well as on your favourite podcast platforms. If you're enjoying the series, please do consider sharing an episode with a colleague. It really helps more educators discover the power of coaching. So thank you for joining us. I'm Richard Reid, and until the next time, keep your conversations curious.